Hey everyone, welcome back to Bad End. This is episode 44. Did you miss me? My name's Josh Calixto. I wasn't on the most recent episode, but I was listening to it. It's like, I feel like I was like listening to celebrities talk because there was that layer of distance and I was like, wow, these people are so good at talking about video games. The famous Emma Kidwell of Kinda Funny Games is here.
Wow.
Katie McCarthy, the golden voice as we know her in the industry.
Wow.
Kyle Cookstell, the other dude is also there.
I'm the token white guy of the video game podcast. And I know that's what I'm here for. I know my role.
Yeah, yeah. So to celebrate coming back from GDC, to celebrate our Patreon launching, I'm gonna crack open a beer.
Crap open a beer.
I already opened mine, so I'm just gonna make the sound of
crap
one.
Crap open mine too.
We are all beering it up.
Just gonna sip it up.
And you know what? Why don't you
wait? We need to cheers, Kyle. You're sipping cheers. Before we cheers. I cannot believe this.
Oh, I thought we were all sipping. Oh my Sorry. God.
Okay.
Three.
How do we cheers?
One.
I'll
cheers.
Touch my mic
yeah,
with the beer.
I'll just like clink it.
All right. And you know what, listener? If you're listening to this podcast right now, we got deep love in our heart for you. So why don't you sit down? Crap open a beer with us and drink along while we talk
or a soda
about
if you don't drink
games.
A soda or a glass tea. I've been getting really into tea lately. That's like my new thing.
This is a sour beer I'm drinking, cucumber. Ooh, sour, and I can't tell if it's good or bad because it's sour. And I
sours are mixed for
it's probably
me.
A sour.
I like when they're very fruity and they barely taste like beer, because then it's like, I don't even know if this is beer. Why is this qualified as beer? When it's like
I
a
feel
watermelon
like the more
sour.
Repulsive a sour beer is for me, the more I'm into it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's
if
bad.
If I have like a weird, like, if I like recoil, I'm like, oh, this is a good one.
Cucumber sour.
Yeah.
You guys got to try this. Cucumber sour. It's super refreshing from
it's got that Helvetica on the can.
10 Barrel
yeah,
Brewing
it's
Company.
Right
it's
can.
Got a little Helvetica going on here. It's really yeah. great, delicious beer. Try
it's
that
nice
out.
Cucumber
design.
Sour.
Again, I'm Josh Calixto. Did I introduce you guys yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, we nope. So we did a little some.
Little
Kyle I'm Cookstow, drinking an IPA,
Katie
New
McCarthy,
Belgium
US, us, USG.net,
mm-hmm,
Kyle Cookstow, VR, volumetric, filmmaker, extraordinaire.
Game developer. I was at GDC for game developing.
Okay, give you a little preview here. We're going to talk about Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, which is the big game everyone's raving about. I am raving about this game.
Josh
this is
was
my...
late to record because he was too busy playing Sekiro.
My life has been consumed. This thing's been out for like a week. We're recording this up pretty
good.
You're playing
five
on like
days.
My schedule.
It's been out
you know?
5 days and I played 24 hours. So
that's like how fast I play games. So it's like, damn, Josh is like getting a taste of my life.
Josh
right
is
now.
Like really just in it.
I haven't
just
been
living,
into
breathing.
A game like this in such a long time. And this is, I don't want to overhype this thing, but it might be my new favorite game of all time.
That is like such a ridiculous
I feel like,
phrase.
Is this because you're like, is it because you're a giant weeb?
No.
Love Dark Souls.
We'll get to
Japanese
it.
Stuff.
But first, let's, you know, spend a couple minutes here. Let's recap what happened at GDC. Anything cool? I mean, our last episode, we talked a lot about it. But any salient points you want to talk about? Kyle, you were there as a dev. Let's do
it. I was there as a dev. Yeah, so, I mean, we had the episode on Wednesday where that was like kind of, I think it was like early-ish Wednesday, so the conference floor had like just opened. And so we hadn't actually like done any like GDC scooping yet. But yeah, I mean, talk about my GDC a little bit. I went as like a proper game developer, which means that I was there like mainly for like business shit. So I was pitching my game Cantata to publishers, some which you may have heard of. But like that was kind of a crazy thing. I did it last year too, but the game was just way more in a state this year of like being able to pitch it. So I was like meeting with publishers. I was pitching the game, trying to basically get it, get some funding for the game as well as kind of get some backing support to really bring it to the market. But other than that, just like wandering around as a developer and like talking to other developers that are working on cool shit that I've like seen on Twitter or like been following or just stuff that I had never known before. And just like talking development stuff. Like it is a first and foremost a developer conference. So a lot of fucking developers are there talking about developer stuff. So a lot of like just doing that. I actually did a little like blog post on the Cantata website about what I thought was cool at GDC. So I won't go into that too much, but yeah, it was cool. It's cool to be there as like a person that's a developer, because it's so much like so much of the game development community is like spread out across the world. And at GDC, it's like the one time of year where like the most game developers all get together and are like, what up? And you can just like meet people that you've been following or like talking to online or whatever, and just kind of like put a face to a name and shit. So like I got to meet like Lucas Pope from Oberdin. I could talk to him for a little bit. I talked to Terry Cavanaugh, who did like Super Hexagon. Now he's doing Dicey Dungeons. I actually talked to a lot of the Paratopic team. I met Jess, and then I also met Emily, who runs Rebind, which I want to have on the podcast. So maybe she'll be a guest soon.
Sick.
Yeah.
Sick.
Sick.
We should have some of these people on for sure. I like all those people.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a cool thing because people are just like, they're developers who are just making games, and they're like there to promote their game. So you can just basically like, if you're not meeting someone, you can just walk around and just like talk to people and just be like, oh shit, you made this game. Well, let's talk. And then they're like, I love talking about my video game. So it's like a super cool place if you're into that sort of thing to meet those people. It's like less of a place to like play video games. But that stuff is definitely there. Like, especially the alt control stuff, mm-hmm. which I know Katie wrote a little bit about, on US Gamer. But for the most part, it's like people just like hanging out. I mean, the main part of GDC, right, is the big like talks and sessions and shit. But I'm not rich enough to be able to buy a full pass. So I just go with like the cheapest pass and just hang out and talk to people. So that was super cool. I saw some cool shit there. But I don't know, Katie, if you have any other like impressions or, you know, any GDC musings post our episode.
Yeah, it was kind of like a chill GDC for me. I feel like I met like a lot of people, you know, like just in passing, like coming up to people and they're like, oh, I'm talking to this person, and be like, oh, hey, like, what's up? And introduce myself. But also like people I've been friends with on like Twitter for a long time. Like I hung out with like Yusuf Cole a bunch. Like he's super chill. We had him on the podcast, right?
Yeah, he was on the podcast. Yeah. I met him too.
Yeah,
for sure.
He's been
yeah.
here.
It's like super, super chill dude. Like hung out just like a bunch of people that I've known for a while, but not in person. So it's nice to put like, you know, yeah, like face to names, you know. Twitter mutuals, now IRL friends, basically. yeah, and I interviewed some cool people. Like I interviewed Sam Barlow, maker of Her Story. His new game sounds fucking batshit, and he said it's coming soon. I don't know how soon he means, but his new game, Telling Lies, it stars like Logan Marshall Green, Alexandra Shipp, Carrie Bechet, who is like in Halt and Catch Fire, and I can't remember the fourth actress's name. But it's like, it's a really interesting game where you steal, I guess, an NSA hard drive, and it's like cataloged all this footage of these four people's lives over the course of 2 years, and your job is just to like in Her Story, like search terms, and then also the new thing is like you can tap on like subtitles, like, oh, like this is an interesting phrase they're saying, like see where else it pops up. And kind of like investigating why the NSA has been invading these people's privacy, but also like what are these people's connections to each other and like blah blah. And it just seems like really interesting and really ambitious. Like I'll be amazed if it comes together, and it will probably come together because Her Story is very good. So I'm really excited for that. I didn't actually play it. It was like he showed me on his phone while we're talking and stuff. So it's kind of like a not really hands off demo, but also he was showing it while it came up in discussion. I interviewed the Sock Pop guys, and that should be going up sometime next week, or I guess at times recording it'll be maybe already out. But I profiled them; they're super cool. They run a Patreon where they make two games every month, so one game every 2 weeks. And basically, what they do is like one of them makes a game, so it's like it's not like they're all working on the same game at once. They all kind of have their passion projects, but they put them out as like Sock Pop Collective. And it's just like a really interesting business model, and they're like super chill guys and doing well. Like they're almost sustainable, basically, which is pretty cool. It's cool seeing indie devs find new ways to be successful, basically, when, you know, this industry is horrible. But yeah, I don't know. It's just like overall like a pretty chill conference compared to the past years for me. But Yeah, I had a good GDC. Hung out a lot at night. And then Friday I was supposed to hang out. I was like, I'm too fucking tired, so I'm going to bed. And I went to bed. It was great. That's my GDC.
I'd say the one cool thing I saw that I wrote a passing mention of and in my GDC post was specifically I got to I sat down and played Samurai Gun 2 for like 30 minutes because I fucking love Samurai Gun, and Samurai Gun 2 is like basically the same. It's kind of there's a few new mechanics that seem like kind of big changes, but it's weird that it's like a whole separate game because it's so much of it feels like the exact same, and like a lot of the levels even are some of the same levels. But specifically you have this ability to just like unload your whole clip of bullets, and then you can also like kind of shoot yourself in the air. But it's like, I don't know if there's other features that they're like holding back or something, but at least the multiplayer mode seems really similar to Samurai Gun 1. But like I'll still fucking buy it because I love Samurai Gun. So
I'm always curious, like, what if you got like pro gamers in a room to play like one of those like indie couch competitive games, you know, like actually people who are good at video games, not just like PBR drinking hipsters who typically play these games. Like, damn, what would that look like? You know what I'm saying?
I think they do that. I want to say they like at Evo each year they have like real fighting game people play some of the indie shit. Like I feel like Samurai Gun was at Evo the year it debuted.
I feel like Towerfall had like a competitive scene.
Towerfall's got one. I mean, dude, like it's crazy. Like the people who come and play these games are like, a lot of them who sit down at GDC to play like a video game like this are like really good at it. So I'm like pretty good at Samurai Gun, but I was definitely getting worked by some people.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So the other crazy thing was like right next to Samurai Gun was the Spelunky 2 demo. This is about the Day of the Devs.
Oh my god.
And like, dude, the Spelunky community is fucking nuts. They were like, there'd be people who were like playing it, and like there'd be people that'd be standing behind the people playing it that were just like, almost like you're watching like a speed run, just like kind of verbally talking to each other or like talking at each other about what was going on, about like what the mechanics were different and like what they should do in a given moment, just like commentating these people's plays like ambiently. And there's like kind of this whole weird like micro community formed around people watching other people play Spelunky 2, and that was fucking nuts. Just like the depth of that community and the knowledge there is insane.
Spelunky is, I mean,
people love that game.
One of the best games ever made.
Yeah.
In my opinion. In a lot of people's opinion, I would say.
Yeah, I wouldn't dispute that. I always felt like left out because like I read his book on Spelunky or making it, and I've just like never clicked with it for some reason. And I feel like there's something wrong with me because like everyone loves it so fucking much, you know?
I had a thought today that I was gonna tweet out. So, you know, bad end listeners, let me know if we should tweet this. But I was like thinking about like kind of in film. It's like people go to see films for a few different reasons. One is like famous actors and actresses, and like another is like they like the thing it's based off of. Maybe that's probably it. That's like most of the reasons why people go and see films. If you're like an average film goer, or like you saw it had a good rating somewhere. And what people don't go see films for is like, I don't think people that are normies actively go out and like seek films with like really good cinematography or like really good editing or something. And I'm starting to think that like games are similar, where like, I don't think the mass market just like cares about like good design. Like, I don't think that that's like an appealing part of someone playing a video game. It's like people will pick something up for like graphics, or people will pick something up because they like the setting, or like it's by a company they've liked before. But like this, I think like the notion of like caring about design, especially something like vis-a-vis like Spelunky, is like, it's a secondary concern, where if you don't like it's weird. It's like, if you don't necessarily care about anything, other stuff that's going on with Spelunky, you're not going to like stick around for the design unless like you're a nerd. In the same way, like, I mean, I would care about Spelunky's design because I'm like a game developer, and I also care about cinematography because I've done film stuff, but like if you're a normal person and you're like not into exploring caves and you don't like platformers, you're not gonna like stick around with Spelunky because like the design is good. And I've been thinking about that in terms of like other games too that have like, you know, ostensibly like good design, and people don't play them, but also think about a lot of big games that have like really shitty design that also have massive audiences where the design just like doesn't matter. Like every like third person AAA action game is like the design is, it's not like a well designed thing. It's like a formulaic at best.
You're talking about like aesthetically or like what do you,
oh, like mechanically, like full on, like, you know, a game designer sat down to use mechanics to make a thing.
I
think like that is like not a selling point for people on games, and
that's,
I think,
true.
That,
but I feel like for
communities form around stuff that has like good design.
I disagree,
whatever,
with
but
that.
That's like a niche
thing.
I
would say like indie games have like a lot of them soar on the like, you know, the promise of having unique design. Like I guess like Oberden was like this like groundbreaking thing last year because people were like, oh, I've never seen a game like this before. Like that was like good design. I feel like.
There's also
indie
so much
games
of a
are,
look with that game, though, right? Like,
I guess.
Oberden is so much of a look.
But I feel like indie games kind of, like, can coast to, like, I guess, word-of-mouth success through good design, whereas a AAA game can be like, oh, these are, like, familiar design elements I've seen in other games before, but if it's, like, polished and if it has, like, a moving story and if there's, like, some hook in there, like, of, like, blockbuster quality, like, it doesn't need that, like... I guess Spider-Man would be a good example, right? Like, Spider-Man's, like, not... I don't know, the swinging's like great and whatnot, but the combat's pretty by the numbers, pretty much like an Arkham like thing, but it's like more fast moving, and then like the open world's like pretty like open worldy, you know, it's like we've seen the open world in like every Ubisoft game, so I would say like that game's not like design wise interesting, it's more interesting in terms of like the animation or, you know, the story's like pretty good or like how, I don't know, that type of stuff. And I feel like AAA games can coast away with like not having super groundbreaking or intelligent design practices if it's like competent or good or like good on like whatever it's delivering on.
I think like the way that you're talking about like people engaging with design is kind of like a misnomer. Like the way that design manifests in video games is like so much different. Maybe it's not that much different from the way that like it manifests in like cinematography in film and stuff like that, because, you know, when you're dealing with design in games, like that's something that you're assessing somewhat passively. Like I think it's something that matters to people in the moment. I think people will notice like if a game has like super shitty design, like it will be annoying to them even if they are willing to overlook that. I think maybe it's not the highest priority. I don't think like they are just going to get a well-designed game. So like in Red Dead Redemption, there's like a lot of really iffy design elements that people are willing to overlook because other parts of that game shine so much. But I do not think that people are necessarily going like, this game is superbly designed. I think a lot of people are going like, there's a lot of shit about this game that's really annoying, but everything else is really good. Like a lot of the design feels outdated.
That's kind of my point though, right? Is that like, the design is kind of an ancillary part of what attracts people to a game. And I think there's like a, as like game designers want to raise up their designs of games as like reasons to engage with a game, the reality seems to be that the design is like, if it's there, it's great and people can latch onto that, but people are going to go to games that have shitty design and they will not go to games that have good design if other elements aren't in place. It's like, you're not going to play, you know, you're not necessarily going to play Oberden if it didn't look like a really kind of cool retro thing. Like the framing of Oberden is boring. It's like you're a tax person and you're going on a ship and finding out what happened. You're like, sounds stupid. But like you look at the ship and you're like, that looks cool. Maybe there's something more going on there.
But
so I think the point is that like design is not this like, it feels like it can be lifted up as kind of like this big selling point. But I think the reality is that it's like not, it's not as much as a driver of attention, and people are also willing to forgo bad design for, like you said with Red Dead, like for other stuff that kind of compensates to a degree.
But at the same time, like, I think that games with really superb design do get attention. Like, I think Oberden did very well. Like, I think Spelunky did do very well. And, like, if a game has exceptional design, people, for the most part, do kind of realize that and they tend to do better, I would say, if this is just off the top of my head, than like, for instance, like, you know, Tree of Life. The Tree of Life has good cinematography, or like anything that Roger Deakins did has good cinematography, but a lot of people aren't going like, oh, we're gonna check out the new Deakins film, like, you know, except for like film students or like people who know who Roger Deakins is, you know. It's that kind of thing. Like, I feel like people do know who Lucas Pope is because he did Papers, Please, and that was like a huge game that like kind of blew up, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's also some like sort of auteur theory going on there between like you can obviously name Lucas Pope as the designer of Obra Dinn, but like you're not going to necessarily seek out like the developer of, you know, X big game from big like 40 person studio plus, and like follow their design. Like you're going to look at that from a different angle. Like, true. It's easy to kind of associate design and indie as like, you know, one and the same, because it's like one person, one design, etc. Like Brendan Chung, or like, yeah, Lucas Pope, or, you know, other like indie, like what's her name, like Natalie Lawhead, like stuff like that. Like that's its own kind of like auteur thing, but you're not gonna like go dig around and see, you know, oh, the lead designer of League of Legends left to go to this project. I mean, the closest thing we had to this, I think, is probably actually like Richard Garfield, and that's probably why people are really excited about Artifact initially, because it was like, oh shit, it's a Garfield thing.
R.I.P.
Like, he's working on that.
Pulling out the rest
but
of my
he's
beer.
He's like such at a high level. Like, there's not a lot of other people like that, where like I would follow like Emmanuel Lubezki around and figure out like what he's shooting next, or Deakins or whatever.
Yeah.
But you don't think you have the same sort of culture. It's like, it feels like a similar culture to designers, where like only those in the know really care about where designers moving around. It's, I think it's also, it feels like, we mentioned Sekiro, but it's like that fuels a lot of the From Software narrative too, where it's like, oh, you know, Miyazaki worked on one, Dark Souls 1, didn't work on Dark Souls 2, which is why it sucks, worked on Dark Souls 3. I actually don't know where he's at for Sekiro, but he like worked on Bloodborne. And it's like,
I think he directed
there's
the Sekiro.
Sort of like, he did? Yeah. So I think there's like that sort of thing there, but it's like, those are so few far between. And then even then, like, normal gamers are just see like cool ninja game that looks nice, it is like Dark Souls, sounds cool, versus like, oh, this is a Miyazaki joint, I'm gonna join that thing. So
yeah,
I don't think it's not like a one-to-one, but I definitely think there's parallels between like design appreciation and like cinematography appreciation, and kind of their relationship to the products that they're a part of.
True. Do we want to talk Sekiro?
Wait, I want to talk about one more thing.
Oh,
before we get to Sekiro, on the note of design, a game where the design is like very in front has come out recently, which is the delightful indie puzzler Baba Is You, which I think actually won a design award.
I think last IGF.
Last year, yeah. At IGF, it definitely won best student game. It might have won a design thing too, but that came out last week, and it's the premise is basically that it's like a Sokoban kind of like block pushing game, but you do push blocks, but you're also actually push around like rules. So the title of the game, Baba Is You, is like related to the fact that in the game there'll be like a block that says Baba, there'll be a block that says Is, and then a block that says You, and then if you push those together, you'll start controlling a character called Baba. But then if you like push the word rock in front of his you, you'll become a rock. And then there's the word and is in there, so you can do like Baba Is You and rock, and then you control Baba and the rock. And then there's also like, you know, rock is float, and then the rock will float in air. So the game is about basically pushing rules around to like kind of like build a victory condition. But yeah, that's a small intro. Katie, you were playing it too, right?
Yeah, I've been playing on Switch. It's really good on Switch. It's kind of like the perfect Switch game. It's like I pick it up before bed, and I play a few puzzles, and I get frustrated, and I put it away. And that's kind of been my routine. But yeah, I really like it. And I feel like I sound like a maniac when I'm like thinking it out loud, you know? Like thinking in my head, like, okay, how long is all this? So it's like, okay, like rock is float. Can't move, rock is float. But I can move, like, is under rock, and then you're like, rock is blah, 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 or whatever. And there's just, like, the rules are just, like, they're, like, deceptively simple, but it's like putting it all together, and there's like some really hard levels. Like it gets like really tough, like
yeah,
pretty early on.
Yeah, it's fucking difficult.
Like it's like there's definitely been times where I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna come back to this one. I don't even want to fucking think about how to solve this right now. Like I had this one where I was like, it was like a poem, so it was like rose is red, violet is blue, something, or flag is wind and Baba is you, and you had to like figure it out, and it was like. It was really hard because they're all stacked with each other and you have to just like push it like perfectly, and you can't push the Baba is you tile away. Like you can't like fragment that or else it's like a fail state. So it's like you have to like undo that. So it's like really hard to like manage all these things and also not like fuck too much up, you know, like, oh, like I accidentally got rid of the flag, but then it's like, well, I can make like the rock win. Rock is win. I sound fucking crazy just talking about it right now. It's like a really weird game, but it's really fun. And everyone was like recommending it to me. And when everyone recommended it, they'd start explaining it. I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck you're saying right now. I just got to try it myself. And then I tried it myself and now I can't stop playing.
Yeah, it's definitely like, it's a cool idea. I'm definitely, sometimes I'm like, sometimes I play it and it, on terms of like design, I'm like, this is really fucking frustrating because there's stuff where like there's not like a great way to experiment in the game. Like you can rewind, which is really nice, but like specifically like you can get far in the game and kind of have an assumption about the way a rule set works, and then you can like spend like 15 minutes to try to like push all these little words around so you can like make them say something,
and then it doesn't work. Yeah.
And then you're like, what the fuck, it doesn't work. Like one of the ones I had recently was like tried to make it so that it said text is when. And I was like,
oh,
why
I think
that
I did
that.
I think I did that too. Yeah, yeah. That definitely happened to me.
That shouldn't work. There's no reason that shouldn't work.
Because like they start glowing, so, like, but you just can't, it just doesn't work.
You can't touch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I was like, this sucks.
Yeah. So there's like weird shit like that where like stuff intersects in ways where it feels like you're supposed to know more about the way the rules are playing out than you actually do. And that can be frustrating. But I do think it has like, what's nice about it, and what I typically don't like about puzzle games that this is good at doing, is that in a lot of puzzle games, like I think especially stuff like Portal, or like any like more strict puzzle game like Puzzle Agent or something, like it's very much like you look at the thing and then you're like, oh, here's the solution, I must now do this thing. And it's like it becomes like, once you know how to solve it, it's like an execution challenge where it's like, okay, how can I just do this thing? It's like if you have the problem where there's like three foxes and two chickens and like a boat and like a canoe in the middle, and you gotta like move them across the river or whatever, you just like run the math in your head and then you're like, okay, well, I just do this. And Baba Is You is kind of cool because like I feel like there's multiple solutions to any given puzzle because of the way that the rules can kind of move around.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So that's like, yeah, that's been like really cool to feel like I get to kind of choose my own way to complete something versus being like, oh, you must do this, in which case it gets really boring and it just feels like I don't like a puzzle game that just feels like I'm just having to do the thing that the developer wants me to do to finish it. So Baba does have like the sort of flexibility of like, how creative can you be with the tools we're giving you to like solve this? And sometimes it feels like you're breaking the game, and that feels really cool where you're like, oh shit, that actually worked. Which is the converse to like shit not working. When cool stuff does work, you're like, oh, like that was rewarding and exciting. I just turned the whole map into a win condition, and like I just touch a wall and I win.
I did this crazy puzzle recently where I had accidentally turned the entire wall. I was like this, and I was like barred in this like walled place, and there's like a locked door, and I'd like push stuff around. I was like just like experimenting, and I was like, I wonder if I could like make the walls keys, and then I could like walk right through them. And I did, and then like my whole screen just looked hilarious because like I was just like surrounded by keys, and I was like walked through and walked to the flag, and it was great. But it was like such a weird, like, oh, that works. Like I didn't think that would work. I was just like kind of like, maybe I could like fuck up this wall a little bit, because I was like kind of like at a dead end. Like, okay, I see like the flags out there, blah blah blah. There's no like key, but, like wouldn't unlock the door. I forgot like why. I think it was like key is stop or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I figured it out, and I didn't. I feel like that was probably not the way it was intended to be solved, but also everything feels like...
Which is like, maybe you were.
Yeah,
you
maybe
know?
That was it. I don't know.
There's like, I think it's cool because like the, there's no like, there's no like implicit rule set in a given level. So it's never like, it's ever the case that like this is always true that X, Y, and Z, and it's so much so that like rules that are actually part of a level are on the level. So if there's a level where it, if there's a level where there's like a state where like you can't move through a wall, that won't just be like an implicit thing. It'll act somewhere on the map.
Like,
it'll say
like in
wall
a corner
is stopped
or some shit. Like it will
yeah,
be
so
like,
you can't like touch it. And so they can do kind of cool stuff with that too, where like they can kind of play, I mean, less so later on because you kind of know what's going on, but at the start, it's like they can kind of play with your expectations about levels. So like, I think it's like the fourth or fifth map on the starting like area. I was like trying to do a thing, and then I realized that I could just walk through walls because there was nothing on the map that said wall is stop. But like me as a player, I was like running around trying to like do something inside the walls and couldn't figure out what to do. But because there was no rule that said wall is stop, I could just move past the walls and like fuck around. So there's definitely cool stuff like that.
So you have to think about like what rules don't exist.
Yeah.
To help your lateral thinking.
Yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
And they kind of like, they onboard you with like new shit too over time. Mm-hmm. So like they start introducing the word and.
Yeah, and then float. Float was a new one for me recently. Yeah, I was float like, was big. Oh, float. Okay. It's like a weird thing. And they have like, and
it's
they
funny,
give
Josh,
like,
it's kind of like, it's like fucking magic or some shit where it's like.
What I like about.
It's like, oh, this card has flying.
The really cool thing about when they introduced float was like you solve one level and it's like pretty straightforward how you solve it. It's like, okay, I'm just going to push things in, like make a pathway through this water so I can like go through. And it was like, it was pretty simple to finish it. And then the next level, it's like the same level, but they introduced.
Was it bridges question mark?
No, it's when they, this is when they introduced float. And it's like, no, it's like the same exact level, but now the rock is float. And it's like, oh, so I can't use the rock to do the thing. So it's like, now I have to make rock Baba. So I can go across and I have to push things. Like, it was really
this sounds
so clever.
Not, I mean, I don't know. Anything that really sounds good. Like programming is like not, typically not my thing.
Oh, it's fun.
So this is
just,
the other thing
fun.
Though, is like, but this is the other thing though, Josh, is that I'm playing this. I'm like, is this actually a good design? Because some of it feels like a little bit of like an abdication of responsibility. Like at times it feels like it swings too far where it's like, I don't care what the fucking rule set is. I just want to play the game. But then it swings. And then, but the other, at the same time, or like on the next level, it's like, oh, this is really smart because you can actually kind of experiment with like what's, what they give you. So I definitely kind of vacillate between like, this sucks. This is actually not compelling. And it feels like it gets to the point of like the execution challenge thing where it's like, if all you really want me to do is to say that this is this and this is this, just fucking say that. I don't have to prove to you that I can push blocks around in a way that makes it happen. Mm-hmm. But when the puzzles are really good, it feels like you actually have some agency there as a player to determine like what and how you win a level. So it definitely rides that balance, and some levels are definitely better than other levels. Mm-hmm. And you do have the benefit of being able to kind of skip stuff. You don't have to like beat every single level. So it's fun to play. It's simple. It's lightweight. Like Katie said, you can just kind of play it before bed, but I'll keep playing it. I don't know if I'm going to beat it because it is fucking hard. So
yeah, I feel like I envisioned me hitting a wall eventually. I've been doing a thing where I like kind of like if I'm stuck in a level, I'll like move forward and I'll go back and maybe try it later on when I feel like more like confident or whatever. And usually I think I've passed every level so far up to the point where I'm at now. Which is, I guess, World 2, where they introduce, like, float and shit.
The underwater level.
Yeah. So I'm still pretty early on, I guess. I don't know how long it is. The world map looks pretty big, so I'm assuming there's, like, a lot going on. But I imagine, if it's this hard early on, I imagine I'm probably not going to last that much longer once it starts getting really hard.
Speaking of hard games,
good segue, right?
Sekiro. Shadows Die Twice. Game of the year. One of the best games ever made. Potentially best twice? Combat ever done. Yeah, I mean, the only thing wrong with this game is that the title is wrong because I die a lot more than twice. I'm sure that's not the first time a joke has ever been made, but...
Josh, set the stage. What is Sekiro?
Okay.
Sekiro.
Okay.
Sekiro.
I have played Dark Souls Part 1. I beat Demon Souls. I got really far in Dark Souls 2. I played a little bit of Dark Souls 3. I played like half of Bloodborne. And I fell off like almost all those games because A, I get freaking scared. Okay. I get stuck. I get intimidated. I hate seeing the same fucking octopus-faced motherfucker kill me. I hate it. It's oppressive. I don't like walking around in those games because I'm scared all the time. And I'm in a constant state of fear. I'm in a constant state of distress. And the feedback loops in my brain say, fuck this shit, never come back. And I don't. And I don't ever come back. I don't know what got me to beat Demon's Souls. I guess because I had a lot of time in my hands. I was still in college at the time. But speaking of which, I mean, we've been playing these games for a long ass time now. Demon's Souls came out when I was in college.
Yeah.
And Sekiro is like what I wish all of those games were, personally. Okay? It's a ninja game. The aesthetic is way more welcoming. It's way less stressful to me. It's way the art style is like way less oppressive and intense. I don't feel like super afraid all the time. I feel brave. I feel empowered. I feel fucking awesome. I feel like a ninja in this game. Okay.
Whoa.
It is like everything that I really, I swear to you, this is like what I wish Dark Souls was. And I feel like it's the game that From Software has wanted to make for a long time. Now, I'm not saying it's like, you know, Dark Souls sucks or whatever. I'm just saying that wasn't really for me. I don't think it was. I think it was not for a lot of people. I think like a lot of people bounced off of Dark Souls because it was so intense and so brutal. And the thing about this game is that it's just like it welcomes you and it uses the challenge level to kind of bring you into its world more. And I've been talking about the difficulty of this game a lot because it is very hard. In a lot of senses, it's harder than Dark Souls. But it is more rewarding than Dark Souls, I think. And also, I think it's richer than Dark Souls is in a lot of ways. Because Dark Souls is like, it feels like you're always behind the difficulty curve. It feels like you're always trying to cheese the next boss. You're always trying to like finagle your way to the next area, and because of that, like, you feel like you're just gonna die all the time. In Sekiro, it's like you feel like every time you die, you learn something. You're like, your brain is processing these loops, like, oh, I didn't block correctly here. When I see this animation go off, I have to remember jump, or when I see this happen, I have to parry. When I do this, I have to do this. But every boss teaches you something different. So you're consistently getting better and better and better at this game. And it's amazing, like, the way that they've tapped into the way that your brain works and how you learn and how you get better at things and just crammed it into this little microcosm of a world. You feel like a fucking ninja. It's so sick. It's so good. Like, all this stuff is amazing. It takes a lot of the stuff that like Dark Souls did with its storytelling, a lot of it is vague, but a lot of it is written, a lot of it is voice acted, and you have, you know, characters who tell you like, you're about to go to the, like, next you should go to this place where these monks live and this blah 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 blah, and they give you like some background on what you're about to do, and you go there, but it's still mysterious the way that Dark Souls was, but it's not like the complete unknown. You have some color going in, you have a little bit of an idea of like what you're about to encounter, but there's like just enough space where you can kind of imagine what's going on. So like, for instance, you go to this place called the Gun Fort, right? And there's these just warriors there who are just wrapped in bandages and they have guns and they're all like master marksmen, but then like you find out that they're all like women before that, so it's like it's adding color and like kind of humanity to these people that you're fighting. And it gives you like just a better sense of what's going on without giving it all away. You know, there's still like that space that Dark Souls gives you where it's like, what is going on? This is mysterious. Like, this has that whole mythology and mystery to it. But at the same time, like, it's enriched by the amount of context that they're giving you for this stuff. Yeah, I don't want to like just spend all this time just riffing on it solo. So I don't know if you guys, Katie, seems like you're very like not into Dark Souls.
I'm like, so like I had the same experience, right? Where I've just like every time I've tried to play one of those games, I just get super duper duper scared. Like I in Bloodborne specifically, I remember I was probably like a few hours into the game. And I remember I got to a point and then I got in a fight and I died. And I, where I had last saved or spawned or whatever, I had to like walk down this alley, which was like full of people again. And I was like, I have to fight all of this shit again. And I just like didn't want to do it. And I just turned off the game and never played it again. Cause I was like, I can't do that. The one thing about Sekiro that seems interesting to me though, is it's like actual Japan. It's not like some fictional place like Yharnam in Bloodborne or wherever the hell Dark Souls takes place. It's like doing its own, I guess, depiction of like Japanese like folklore and mythology from like I think the Sengoku period, which seems really interesting to me. Like from I guess a historical standpoint, but also I hear how hard it is. I'm like, I don't think I'd make it through because I'm like a very, I don't want to say, I guess I'm an impatient gamer. Like, I feel like Baba is used easy because, like, I can, like, go back to it. Or, like, even shooters. I feel like shooters, I'm like, if I have a hard shooter, I'm more compelled to go through it. Whereas, like, with action games, if something's hard, I'm just like, I'm just not going to fucking play it like a stubborn little baby. Like, that's just, I guess, how I am, I guess.
What's interesting about Sekiro is that a lot of the game is boss fights. The sections of the game that are not boss fights, between the boss fights, are relatively easy. I could go through a lot of those sections the first time without dying. Not to mention that like when you find your save points, the sculptor's idols, which in Bloodborne was the lanterns, in Dark Souls it was the bonfires, they are placed such that when you light one up, it's like a 20 second walk to the boss. So this game feels a lot of the time like you're just going from boss fight to boss fight to boss fight. So instead of having you like deal with all these like trash mobs, every fight is like, every like most of the gameplay is like you figuring out a boss and engaging with a boss and like feeling out a boss, which is cool because it's a beautiful game because each boss is, it's like a work of art. This sounds cheesy, but if you think of like a sculpture and how it stands there and you kind of like admire its wrinkles and the way that the things that it does and the way that it looks and the way it stands there, like if you're looking at a sculpture and you find all these things to admire, this is like Sekiro is like each boss is its own little world unto itself because you have its AI, which is incredible. I swear to God, it's doing something. I'll fight this boss five times, and then I swear to God, the sixth time it does a move I've never seen before. Or I'll die to a boss like seven times, and then the eighth time it does a totally different sequence of things. Like it'll just repeat the same thing over and over. I'm like, this game is like, I swear to God, this game is screwing with me. And the bosses like feel like their own little entities. Like I'll be sitting there fighting a boss for literally an hour and just repeatedly dying to it over and over, but each and every time it feels like its own different thing. It's crazy, like all the animations. And it's interesting too because you are exposed to these bosses so much, just because you die them over and over and over again, if you're like at my skill level, I guess which is like not super high, but competent, I guess. You're observing like the way that these bosses move because you have to engage with it and you have to respond to it and react to it and like internalize that stuff by muscle memory. You engage with like the art of these beings in a way that you kind of don't in any game that I have yet experienced. And it's just like a really interesting way of engaging with the video game that I'm like super, super into, especially because a lot of the boss design in this game is absolutely spectacular. There's in Demon Souls, Dark Souls, sometimes the boss design managed to get a little bit samey over time. You would have like a dude in armor, like a really big guy in armor, a short guy in armor who moves really fast, but it's like dudes in armor, like spiders, like some weird dragon, like an animal that went crazy. Spiders. Yeah, this game has these bosses that all have their own behavior and they each have their lesson to teach you. They have these ways of moving and these ways of behaving that are so different. And it's just, I'm immersed. Like when I'm in a boss fight, I'm like, I want to fight this thing again. Like it's so amazing. Some of them will talk to you before they fight you. Some of them will like, the amount of stuff. Let me outline one boss that I was stuck on for a little while that just kind of outlines the incredible encounters that you have with the fucking bosses in this game. The boss is called, okay, you're walking down through this tunnel. This is like a little bit of a boss spoiler, I guess. It's not too far into the game. The boss appears twice, so it's not like, you know, it's not like the most cool sacred boss you're gonna see. It's not that big of a deal. Listen, if you're not that big of like a crazy about spoiler shit. You're walking into this cave and you just hear like just like the sound of like a thousand blades sharpening, and you're already like, oh, all right, here we go, like I'm about to fight this crazy boss. You go into this tiny room, like I swear to God, this room is, there's no space to run around. That is something that you have had in basically every fight up until this point, is you have space to work with, so you could dodge, you can run away, you can kind of assess the situation. No, this space is cramped. You go in and there's this fucking long ass centipede looking dude with blades coming out of its back, wrapped in
bandages. Oh, I feel like I've heard about the, or maybe you were
I was talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
In the Bad End Discord, if you subscribe to our Patreon, you can be a part of it as well. And it's coming at you and it's swiping just ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. And you can't avoid them. You can't run away because it's just, the range is so long that it's just killing you. And you die and you're like, this boss is impossible to beat. How can I do this? And then, so the next time you're like, okay, well, what if like I jump when it does that? You jump when it does that, it still slashes you and you die again. You come back, you're like, well, what if I like just blocked? Well, it hits you so many times that it breaks your posture and slashes you, so you can't do that. Well, what if I try running away and just when it finishes that attack, then I can go in and lunge? No, it chases you so far down that you get hit. So there's only one option left, and that's to like actually try to parry each one of these things. Okay?
Oh my god.
Besides,
this is the Daigo thing.
Yes.
That's hella scary.
So you do it. And then once you've parried all those, you've basically halfway beaten the boss. And then he goes in for a big slash. You jump on him, you slash him. This is all things that I had to learn by dying to the boss a couple times again. And then he goes in for another one of those sequences, and then you parry them all again, and then you get a death blow on him, and that's it. So once you figure out that like main part of like how to beat this boss, the meat of it, the boss fight, when you actually win, only lasts like a minute and a half. It's absolutely bonkers because you've perfected it. Like you've internalized this system, you've internalized this boss's behavior, and you fucking beat it. Like you feel like you're actually beating this boss, as opposed to Dark Souls, where it's like when you beat a boss, it's like, well, I guess I did that. I guess I cheesed it to the point where I was able to kill it. But no, in this game, like you learn how these things move and you can take them out. Like, and you feel powerful. You feel like a fucking ninja. It is nuts. Like there's some, oh yeah, it's amazing. Sorry, Kyle, go ahead.
No, I think I'm currently, some of my friends are playing through all the Dark Souls games and we're currently on 2. Mm-hmm. And like, I've been playing Dark Souls 2 for like fucking 3 years. It's just so slow. It's such not a good game, but I like feel some sense of completion to beat all the Dark Souls games. But to your point, like the bosses in Dark Souls, I think are like thematically, they're always like super cool, right? Like even if it's like a big guy in armor or a small guy in armor, they're like based on their context, they're often like, it's very interesting, like why they're there, what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But like the reality is that like, I think a lot of times the bosses in Dark Souls, like the whole premise and like the theme is kind of like ruined empires and like incumbent leaders. So a lot of the bosses are like kind of like you know, they're like deformed, or they're like crippled in some way, or they're like old, or they're like they're never like someone at their peak. It's always like, oh, this is a boss that's like shitty, like this person is not good. So I think there's like that kind of whole thing going on. But I think to your point though, like a lot of the bosses in Dark Souls are definitely just like, it feels like they're a little too hard sometimes for one person, and then they're just incredibly beatable with like two summons or something. So this whole like, the game doesn't feel necessarily like it cares about its bosses so much as it cares about the space between. Like so much of a boss in Dark Souls is like just getting to the boss. And like you said, it's like you beat a boss and you're like, yeah, I did it. Mm-hmm. Yay. But it's like, it's so like not the point. Like so much of Dark Souls is the journey to get somewhere, with a few obvious exceptions. But like even then, like the tactics for fighting a boss, it's like most of the time it's like dodge their big moves, slice them or magic them, and then run away. Like there's never like, it's basically attack and avoid. This is one thing I really liked about Dark Souls 1 that's like not really in Dark Souls 2, even though the boss design is mostly the same, is that Dark Souls 1 had a really great parry mechanic, which made like basically added this kind of additional level of skill on top of like the combat level, so you could like really kind of like get like closer up with people and like kind of like really fight them. It's what made like the Artorias fight in Dark Souls be really compelling, or like the Gwyn fight was very parry centric. Dark Souls 2 kind of like it fucking changed it. I don't know what they did, but the parry is not the same. But it's cool to hear like in Sekiro that like, yeah, it's not the same, man. In Sekiro that like the, so much of the emphasis, someone was tweeting something, but basically said that like in Sekiro, it feels like the game is geared towards like making you realize like how fucking dangerous a sword is. Like it's not a fucking joke. Whereas in Dark Souls, it's like, I've got a fucking blade carved out of like the tooth of a dragon that's like plus 10, and it still takes me like 10 swipes to defeat like a trash mob in a DLC level or something. Whereas in Sekiro, it's like, no, you have a fucking ninja sword. Like it's strong as fuck. Like being able to beat a boss in 1 minute, like in the scope of Dark Souls bosses, that is so short. Like most bosses in Dark Souls take at least like 5 to 10 minutes on the low end, you know? And that's if it's like an easy boss, like a simple strategy. In some bosses in Dark Souls, you just can't attack for certain periods of time. You just can't do it.
There's a variety. You know, some bosses do take that long. But I can't... Honestly, man, I just want to... Just the combat in this game is so deep and so good. Like, there's not... I feel like there's a lot of bullshit in the way that Demon Souls combat works and Dark Souls combat works, where it's like... There was like a really cool complexity to it that was like subtle and strange, and when it came out, it was like, oh, this is cool. Like, you're fighting in a hallway. Don't use swords because you swipe too widely and you're going to hit the wall and it's going to screw you up. So you need to use spears or whatever, you know? In this game, like, you can really only use your sword. So it's all the complexity comes out of that. If your enemy is using a spear, you have to fight against them differently as if you would fight someone with a sword. If they're going in for a lunge, you have to fight them differently as if they're going through with a swipe. You have to be processing all of the intricacies of the way your enemies work in a way that you just don't in Dark Souls, in my opinion. Like, maybe if you get stuck on one boss, when you get into the flow and you figure that out. But I feel like instead of like actually trying to figure out your opponent and really like defeat them perfectly, you're just trying to cheese the game because it's so unfair to begin with, you know? That's how I feel like it works in Dark Souls. But in this game, it's like there's ways to cheese, but you don't want to cheese. You want to fucking do it. Like you do it. And I've even fought some bosses where like I know there's an easier way for me to beat the boss if I use this, you know, buff or whatever, but I go for the like fucking naked way of doing it because it feels so dope and good. Like parrying, when you get into the groove, you just feel like you can do anything. There's no stamina bar in this game. That's a huge one that I didn't really realize until after. There's no stamina, so you can just infinitely sprint around and size up the enemy animations. You can slash however much that you want. And you can play it kind of, there's a lot of flexibility and freedom in the context of a given fight. But you also have to be precise. You have to be consistent. You have to have your head in it. You have to know what you're doing. And that's just something that I feel like I'm getting better at as I go through this game. Again, I have 24 hours in this goddamn game after 5 days. I would never be able to play a Souls game like that.
You made it sound more appealing than anything like other people trying to sell me on it. Because it sounds like it's a much faster game, which that's a lot. That
infinitely faster. And if you,
which,
what's cool about this game too is that you can actually run away because there's stealth mechanics, and they're very forgiving stealth mechanics too. So you have your grappling hook. So if you're like really in the middle of a heated fight, you can just like grapple out of there, go to a save point, and then save. Death is not like super depressing the way it is for me in Dark Souls because I just take it. You know, the way that the death system works in this game is if you die, you lose like half of your shit. Like you lose half of like the experience. You lose some amount of experience that you gained. You lose a lot of the cash that you've made. But it's not that big of a deal because you can just make cash whenever you want. And the cash, it does not like buy you things that are like super important. Like gear is not that big of a deal in this game. And then your experience, if you lose it, like you can't go below like a level. So if you have 5 levels of experience, you can't lose, go beyond that. So if I'm stuck on a boss, like it's okay to just keep dying, whatever. It's like, it's not that big of a deal. Death does not feel like a huge thing. So there's not that thing that's like constantly annoying you about this game. And yeah, it's just like quality of life is better than Dark Souls. The combat, in my opinion, is better than Dark Souls. The voice acting is really damn good, and I'm super into the story of this thing. Like, the story of this shit is amazing. Like, it feels like From Software is, like, hitting their stride. Like, they're in their groove writing this damn thing. And yeah, like, I'm just fucking so into it. The ninja stuff in this game is, like, the most ninja shit ever. And they just keep bringing more on, and you're just like, how do they keep finding dope ninja shit to show me? This is awesome. Also, like, you don't have to worry about like equipping stuff and all that bullshit. All the systemic stuff is very simple in this game. There's not like,
it's more like, it sounds like it's more like an action game, less of like an RPG.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's what I keep hearing, but people are still, it's like, you know, people are making it out to be like, it's like way harder because you don't have that progression you get in an RPG. But it doesn't really sound like that. It sounds like just the bosses are better designed.
There's a lot more bosses.
It's more appealing.
All the bosses are harder. I would compare it more to like a Super Meat Boy or like a Celeste or something, where it's like you get to one section, you learn it, and then you surpass it and you feel really good about yourself. But unlike in the way that it often comes up in the context of a platformer game, because it's combat, it feels like you are learning more about these opponents, and it fleshes them out through combat because you're engaging with the game through this beautiful fighting that it gives you. And that is like something I've never really experienced in the game before. I experience it a lot in multiplayer games where it's like, oh, like this person's playstyle is really interesting. I have to move this way to dodge their attacks rather than this way because it's an actual person. In this game, like, you feel like you're learning about that. You're learning that about these AI opponents. It's incredible. I really think this is one of the best action games I've ever played. Like, it might be the best one I've ever played. There's not that close of competition. Like, Dark Souls and stuff was already, to me, some of the finest combat ever made in video games, and this, to me, just, it blows it out of the water. Like, I don't even get frustrated playing this damn thing because I'm having such a good time playing it. Death is like, oh man, gotta try again. I made this analogy a little bit earlier, but like, have you ever dropped in on a half pipe before? This is the most California thing ever, but you're looking at this thing, right? Your skateboard's on the edge, and you're like, there's no way. This is impossible. I'm going to die. And the first two, three, four, five, six times, you're going to fucking fall and it's going to hurt and it's going to suck. But then the sixth time you do it and you get it and it's like amazing. And then the seventh time you do it, you fall again. And then the eighth time you do it, you land that shit and then you're like, oh, I have acquired this skill to do something and it's amazing. Now imagine that loop with 10 minutes spread between each one. And that's what Sekiro is. Like, it's just this constant loop of like failing, learning, overcoming over and over and over with beautifully designed bosses and fights. It's like constant new half pipes in front of you.
And there's skateboard DLC.
Yeah. I can't stop thinking about
it. It sounds like the Dark Souls comparison is like only, I feel like you're only compared to Dark Souls because it's by From Software. It sounds like they're different. They're trying to do different things. Like it doesn't, if they did Dark Souls 4. It kind of sounds
more like Tenchu, right? Like that's what From Software was doing way before the Dark Souls became a thing. And those games had a reputation for being also very hard. So it kind of like almost seems like a fusion of those two series, because this sounds like it still carries like sensibilities from Dark Souls, like these like really intricate boss fights, like this really like deliberate, I guess, I don't know, I mean, I guess it sounds faster, so maybe not as deliberate, but I don't know, it sounds to me like, if I don't think they have the Tenchu license, so maybe it's like a, oh, we want to keep making this game but we can't, so we're gonna make our own thing, fuck it. But this sounds definitely more interesting than Tenchu all of a sudden. So
yeah you know when you're feeling it or when you're playing it, a lot of it, like, you're definitely like, oh, this is definitely a From Software game. Like a lot of it feels like Dark Souls ish but you know, it's just, so at the same time, it's an entirely different thing. It's like its own genre, you know what I'm saying? Also, like, the story is so cool. It's so cool. Dan Freeze.
So sad about it. You know, the story in Dark Souls is cool.
Dan Freeze made this like funny observation, which is like, in Dark Souls / Demon Souls, like someone fucked up the world hundreds, thousands of years ago. In Bloodborne, someone fucked up the world a week ago. And in Sekiro, it's like, let's not fuck up the world, guys. Like, basically, like, it's everything, you know, there's actually humans that still live in this world. It doesn't feel empty. It doesn't feel ruined. It feels like you're trying to avert disaster and prevent corruption from taking hold. And so I would say in that sense, like, it's a little bit more of like a positive outlook, a little bit more, it's less oppressive just overall, I would say this game is.
I fucking love that morose Dark Souls shit though.
Yes.
That's like such my,
but just, you got like, five games, how, of, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, Kyle.
Yeah, no. I'm not out here trying to like say that we should have got another Dark Souls game. I'm just saying that it's like, I appreciate what Dark Souls is, and I'm excited to see From just leverage their like being on their shit to do other stuff too. Like, I think it's cool. Like, I don't need another Dark Souls game, but it's cool to see them kind of like evolve it for different.
They can
stuff.
Write some characters because
there's totally another version of like Sekiro that like looks like. It plays like Dark Souls, right? Like, it could have been that, but they're not doing that. It's more action-centric. Like, can you jump in this game?
Yes, you jump a lot.
That's like, you have a grappling.
That's fucking crazy.
It's like, very vertical.
Jump. That's like, you can't
jump.
A lot
of the design
is
verticality. And
yeah, it's crazy. I can't even imagine.
It adds a whole
like.
Element of combat, too, because like, if an opponent does like a sweep attack, you can jump off their head and then slash them. Like, it's sick. Like, that's so fucking dope.
Real ninja shit.
It's so fucking cool. Every minute, there's like new shit in this game that I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. It's so cool. Play this game. Honestly, this is game of the year. I can't see anything else being better than this game for me. This is the best game. I like it better than Witcher 3. Fuck it. This game is
Whoa.
The best. This game is
the best. Okay, Josh,
I'm
obsessed. You need to take
this
a
This game
nap.
Is the best. This is the best game ever. Ah!
Josh, you need to take a chill pill. I feel like a child. Okay, nothing's better in Witcher 3.
I feel like a child, but this is, in my opinion,
that's fair though.
One of the best games ever made.
I honestly feel like the last time I felt like that was for Witcher 3. So I'm glad you have that for a game.
It's so good. Play it for yourself. Let me know what you think. Sound off in the comments below. Like and subscribe. All that stuff. Talk about it with us in the Bad End Discord. But first, you'd have to subscribe to our Bad End Patreon, which is patreon.com/badend. But that's me. That's what I got to say about Sekiro. If you want to talk about this shit more, DM me on Twitter. I want to talk about this. This is all I want to talk about right now. I don't want to talk about anything else.
Sekiro fan club.
Just freaking.
Do you know how long the game is?
No, I have 24 hours in it, and I hope I have 80 left.
How long to beat?
I hope I have 80 hours left. I guess it depends on how good you are, you know?
Yeah. I wanted to plug something before we're wrapping up.
Short. It says main story, 17 and a half hours.
Oh, what the heck are you doing, Josh?
Yeah, damn. Main plus extras.
If you know, good hours. Luck beating this shit in 17 hours, guys. No way it's 17. Maybe if you beat every boss the first try.
It says main plus is 32 hours, 100% run, 50 hours.
Then it's probably 32. I'm probably...
You might be near the end.
Because I'm trying am exploring all the pathways. Like, if I think I missed a spot, I'll come back and try to go down the other paths and kill everything and do stuff. Yeah.
I'm going to plug something really quick. I'm on the newest episode of Retronauts. Actually, I don't know if it'll be the newest episode by the time this episode goes up. I know right now it's like locked for their Patreon subscribers, but it'll be free this week at the time of this recording, next week. Anyway, it should be listable now. It's about Kingdom Hearts 3 and Kingdom Hearts in general. It's like myself and then Jeremy and Bob and Brian Gilbert? No. That's a different guy. That's the Polygon guy. His last name's Henry Gilbert. They have the same last name. That's why I got confused. He's a super nice guy. He hosts some cartoon podcasts. I think What a Cartoon. Him and Bob do that, and yeah, all nice guys. It's a good podcast. Make some jokes, you know, make some voices. It's all in good fun. But yeah, if you're a fan of Bad End, listen to that episode.
Sweet. Anything else anybody wants to add before we wrap up here?
Just wanted to say shout out to our Discord again.
Yeah,
it's amazing. There's a lot of good discussion going on about a lot of different stuff. So thank you guys.
It's become like the Sekiro fan club, basically. As of late.
Also, like, it's the hottest place to talk about K-pop on this side of the internet, apparently. Josh has successfully contaminated the music channel with K-pop discussion.
Yeah, I mean, no, we talk about all kinds of music. We got some music artists in there. We got some game devs in there. We got it's a great little community. Highly encourage you all to sub and join up, because it's a cool... I really, really like this Discord a lot. A really cool mix of people. I'm really into it. So continue to spread the word, continue to support, and continue to be awesome. So again, Bad End Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. You can email us at badendpod@gmail.com. Subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/badend. Rate us and review us on iTunes. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. Later, folks.
See ya.